Hi, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Friday. Yes, Friday. How will the nation survive without George Tenet running the CIA? Plus, Barbara Streisand warms up the fax machine to send us today's liberal agenda. It is Friday morning. I have here with me Mr. Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Sue Ellicott is here.
Isn't it amazing how a four-day work week still feels like five by the time you get to Friday?
Yeah, right.
I can't remember having Monday off now.
Yeah, it's just Friday. Like, I never appreciated this whole Friday thing as much as everybody else in the real world did, because I used to just do comedy, so it didn't have any, you know, I didn't have a job. I just went to work by myself at night, stood on stage, and did the funny.
Well, you're doing that, aren't you?
Right now, tonight, yeah, I am. This weekend, yes. If you're out there and you're in the New York area, or you want to fly in from Europe, Japan, Holland, France, I will be at the Comedy Cellar this weekend on almost all the shows. You can go to ComedyCellar.com and come see me do my routine, as opposed to me speculating and just being, you know, off the cuff funny here. But, you know, the whole work week thing, it's really like I really have a new empathy for people who work jobs. I mean, it's hard to get up every day, drive to work, you know, be with other people in a work environment, pretend you like them, you know. I mean, the strain of that on people's, I mean, I don't know how people do it every day. But
that's why they invented cubicles.
Yeah, the fact is most people don't.
No. They don't pretend?
No, they don't pretend.
They just kind of box themselves up
in that little cubicle,
exactly.
And then talk about each other on the elevator.
Decorate their little world.
And yep. Email. They bitch and moan to one another via in-house email and sit in their cubicles.
Yep.
I got to figure out how to dump my cookies. Do you know how to dump your cookies?
And go to Starbucks.
Yeah, right?
No, like, you know, there's apparently, like, emails, like, I get paranoid about emails that come in, or email, like, I get, like, I'm not going to go into the paranoia thing. But
go ahead, go into the paranoia thing.
But do you know how to clean your computer out of, like,
nope.
You know?
My right. Wife knows how to do that. I know nothing about computers.
So you say to your wife, could you clean out my porn cookies?
Yeah.
The success to anybody's computer is always knowing one person who can do it for you. I don't know anybody who can do it themselves. They just always know somebody who can do it.
I get, like, the email stuff, like, I don't have any worry about emails, like, I'm not doing anything too devious on the email, you know, but I mean, the whole computer thing, like, do you ever get, like, is it true that someone else can use your computer, you know, when it's plugged into the internet?
If they know how to do, if they're hackers or if they're, you know, computer geeks, but, you know, two words, if you want to know, Mike Borges, who was our computer guy here at Air America, who we all love dearly.
Does he make house calls? It's like old-time doctors. They come with their little bag. Where's the patient?
Yeah.
No, those guys make a fortune. Guys who can do that, they charge $200 or $300 an hour just to come and fix somebody's... old ladies call up guys to come
out of
and fix
our
their computer.
Stupidity.
Absolutely.
It's an industry built on most people's, like, I don't know, which button do you push to make it work?
Yeah, can you get me out of the bestiality chat room now?
$500, thank you.
Yep.
So, my wife's on the stairs, $1,000.
Yep.
So I guess I have to worry about the CIA, you know, getting into my computer right now because they're without a boss.
Well, no, they have an interim boss.
Yeah.
A temporary boss.
Mm-hmm.
And you know why that is. All right, now, for those of you who are just getting up from under a rock, George Tenet is out as CIA director. Happened right after we got off the air yesterday.
None of us even, no one I know, no one here in this studio speculated that would happen.
No.
We were hoping for Rumsfeld, even, you know,
Cambone. Anybody.
Anybody, but Tenet was sort of a surprise.
I think it caught Washington by surprise.
Yeah, it caught everybody. It may have even caught Bush a little bit by surprise.
Yeah, he seemed to forget to do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that Bush did, and again, you may argue with his intelligence or lack of saying, but politically he's very astute. He did not want to have a confirmation battle for CIA director going on in the middle of a reelection campaign. So he appoints a magician, John McLaughlin, 32-year CIA guy.
You got to explain that.
He's the deputy. Right.
Yeah,
deputy. He's Tenet's deputy, right? So he's been there all along anyway.
He's Tenet's deputy.
Goal.
And what happened?
The goal.
Oh! There he is. Our commander-in-chief.
You all heard that, right?
I think.
Okay, all right, so it wasn't just in my head. That would be bad. God talks to Bush in his head, and Bush talks
to
me
to you
in my
yours,
head.
Yeah, right?
But, yeah, so this guy, McLaughlin, is Tenet's deputy, and he's known to be an amateur magician, and now I guess he's just been promoted to professional magician.
Yeah.
He's now the head of the CIA.
Yeah, which but he's interim head of the CIA, and that gets Bush out of having to name somebody that's going to be a contentious issue in Congress in the middle of a reelection campaign, as if he doesn't have enough... enough troubles. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of speculation back and forth, both here in New York, in the Beltway, around the world, about exactly why George Tenet left. Now, he said, you know, I left for personal reasons, but nobody seems to
No one's buying that one. Yeah, just
I don't even know if George W. Bush bought that one.
I can see why it's personal when he knows he's going to get he's going to be under fire in coming months for intelligence failures. And there's that there are, you know, a couple of important commissions coming up with looking into, you know, how the U.S. intelligence community failed in the kind of run up to 9/11. I mean, that does have to take its toll.
Well, yeah. And there's a Senate Intelligence Committee report that's getting ready to come out. The 9/11 Commission report will be out in July.
My report's coming out.
Yeah, and Mark Maron's report, which is the third of the troika that would have done him in anyway. So
yeah,
I guess he's
really scared of that one.
Well, and see, now, the other thing that's interesting is that it was just the other day that Secretary of State Colin Powell was pressing the CIA for information about how he was given so much misinformation to present to the UN, because he depended heavily on his friend, George Tenet, and the intelligence that... that he was supposedly passing on. And it is also significant that Vice President Dick Cheney, who's been kind of hiding in the high grass lately, had a three-sentence statement about Tenet's resignation. Three sentences.
What did he say?
That's it. Gee, that's too bad. Essentially, that's what. But let's hear what our actual commander-in-chief had to say about George Tenet, who was the second longest-serving director of Central Intelligence.
He's been a strong and able leader at the agency. He's been a strong leader in the war on terror.
I'm glad they mic those birds close.
Yeah, I think they hype them. I think they magnify them so that it all sounds kind of cute.
It's like the Boone operator was like, oh, look, birds.
Yeah. I was afraid it was Condoleezza Rice making bird sounds in the background. I don't know. Yep, exactly. Well, right after he made that rather brief statement, Bush hopped a plane to Europe.
Off to Rome.
Yep, which is where he is now, actually.
No, he's off around the world to look as new, to increase his stature and look presidential so that all the pictures of the beamed home during his trip make him look like the real commander-in-chief and emphasize the difference between him and Kerry.
He's there for the big Bilderberg summit.
Uh-oh. Yeah, now, you have a whole thing about that. We'll get to that later, though. Tenet, over his 7 years, lost the support of some key members of Congress and some members of the Bush administration as well. There were a number of questions, a number of glitches that critics had focused on, including the 1998 detonation of nuclear devices by India, which apparently caught the CIA totally unaware. The CIA was also criticized for shoddy targeting. You remember that bombing of the Chinese embassy in Yugoslavia back in 99? He took some heat for that. But the September 11th terror attacks may have been a crucial turning point for George Tenet. He had to admit that the CIA could have done more to thwart those attacks.
We all understood bin Laden's attempt to strike the homeland, but we never translated this knowledge into an effective defense of the country.
That's amazing, though. I mean, that just, I mean, for all the personal reasons, and I do think that, you know, being in that job at this time is personally very grueling, but largely because you've presided over some of the most amazing and damaging failures of American espionage in the last few decades.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is also, in addition to all this, the question of whether or not the CIA spun intelligence as per the direction of the Bush administration, to create a rationale for the war against Iraq.
That is the real crux of this, is that, you know, now Chalabi's done, supposedly, and he's the guy that sort of fostered and he was the neocons dude with the information about the WMDs, right? So he gives that information to Tenet, who's skeptical of the information, but Bush, who refuses to hear any information that doesn't, you know, fit in with his plan, bullies Tenet, you know, to give him the information necessary. Tenet signs off on the information, and they go to war, which is a war they wanted to get into since the 90s.
And remember that Tenet didn't just sign off on it. He told Bush that the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq was a slam dunk.
Yeah, but he also told Bush that, you know, on April 10, 2004, that, you know, bin Laden, you know, was a threat.
Yeah,
I mean, not on April 10th, but before 9/11, mm-hmm. Bush is trying to erase his mistake by getting rid of Chalabi and getting rid of Tenet on some level, I believe.
Well, I mean, not just getting rid of. In Chalabi's case, he just, like, wiped his memory. Who?
Right.
Who?
But these are the guys that gave him the information that he used to validate his war in
Iraq.
His
war in Iraq.
Which he was going to do anyway. So now I think he's trying to erase it from the collective memory.
Well, he's not going out on a good note, Tenet, is he? But, I mean, he could be going out before it looks much worse when those commissioners deliver their very damaging reports.
And they'll be coming up shortly, that's for sure.
Still ahead, the president goes to Europe, and our guy in the president's office tells us what's going on his Palm Pilot here on Air America. Twenty past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. You know, Riley, I was trying to set up a story, but I'm so bad at it. You know what I mean? It's like it's weird when you sort of unfold the news story. It unfolds in the way it's supposed to me. I'm like, but the guy was not. You know, it's the guy who was in the first place was not there the second time. You know, how's that? What I was trying to say before, what I was trying to prompt you into talking about was essentially that. Tenet resigning is clearly, an indication that Bush wanted him to resign. I mean, the guy's...
I believe that. I believe there's no doubt about it.
And Chalabi being, pushed out is clearly an indication that Bush, wanted him pushed out for a number of reasons. I mean, being a spy, one of them, but they always knew he was a bad guy. So in my head, what's happening, given that, that Tenet really, did warn the president with the August 6th, PDB that, that bin Laden was a threat, maybe not a specific threat. I mean, he was doing his job to some degree, but he was bullied into allowing the intelligence of WMDs to be used in the State of the Union address and to let Colin Powell use it. So I think on some level that these guys are taking the fall to sort of erase from the American mind the idea that the WMDs were ever important.
Do you remember who went to Langley about the WMDs? Do you remember who it was that went to the CIA headquarters to talk to the agency about the WMDs?
Was it Powell?
Nope. It was Dick Cheney.
You know what? I think Dick Cheney is behind this.
Yeah, a three-sentence response.
Because George Bush has had a good working relationship with Tenet.
Yeah.
And he has done a dedicated professional job across different administrations. He was appointed by Clinton. Mm-hmm. And his father, George Bush's father, told him, make sure you build a strong relationship with Tenet. You know, he's a good guy and you need him. And George Bush Sr., remember, was the head of the CIA. So he knows how important that stuff is to government. I think that Dick Cheney wanted Tenet to be the fall guy.
So he went to Langley again and said, he's got to go.
Yeah, well, I think Cheney has been very much behind the scenes through all of this.
Well, most people think that Cheney's behind the scenes on all of it, that he's the actual functioning president in many respects.
Well, yeah, and that he's pulling the strings. I don't know if he actually greased the skids completely for Tenet. It seemed like there were a lot of people that had the long knives out for him anyway, including, of course, your good friend Ahmad Chalabi.
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing. Now they're both unemployed.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's the new odd couple. Maybe we should do that again.
Are they both victims of plots? I mean, that seems to be what the...
Victims of politics, plots, same thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, Chalabi says it. Look, Tenet was the one that spread the rumor that I was spying for the Iranians.
You know what they are victims of? What they're victims of, I think, is of an ideology which is not working out, right? I mean, that Tenet was told to go away and come up with information that would justify going to war in Iraq, and when it wasn't sufficient, like, we'll go back and try harder.
So you're saying the neoconservative ideology? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I think that Tenet is not an ideologist, but I think that he has, he has been the fall guy because things haven't kind of worked out the way that George Bush and his, I don't know whether that's the neoconservative group, but the ideologist in the White House, the war in Iraq has been a bit of a public relations disaster, certainly kind of in recent months with the prison abuses, which is the kind of the human rights angle of the war, and the failure to come up with weapons of mass destruction, the two main reasons for going into war, that Iraq was a threat and a humanitarian issue, that America has undermined itself.
So the neoconservative ideologists is really what we're talking about here. The guys that are saying that doesn't matter why we're in Iraq, you know, this is something that needed to be done, and, you know, they're shameless about it. They're going to stay on message and keep going no matter what. And this guy's just taking a hit.
I think that Tenet was a professional guy, but he was not an ideologue and he was not a policy guy. He wasn't. He maybe was just politically not astute enough.
No, I think he was astute. I think what happened was, and I think this happened both in his case and in Colin Powell's case. They said, look, if we're going to tell you now, this is not going to work. The weapons of mass destruction, the various arguments that you're putting forward to go to war are not good enough. And they kept saying, look, we want this, we want this, we want this. And finally, both Tenet and Powell said, well, okay, if that's what you want, this is what we'll give you. And that's why Powell was so willing to take the faulty intelligence, even though he had questions about it.
Right.
And then go before the United Nations and ruin his credibility in the world, by the way. People in America, I don't think, really understand. So you pointed this out before. People in the States don't understand how thoroughly Colin Powell has ruined his reputation over that speech he gave to the United Nations with a whole load of crap, which, by the way, half of which he got from the CIA in the first place.
He's very angry about that. I think the one thing that will come out of this is that the debate structure, the intelligence agencies will come about, because that was a big failure leading up to 9/11, how the FBI and the CIA did not exchange information and various levels and kind of regions didn't share information. And Bush, though he's picked Tenet to be his fall guy, you know, the paradox here is that Bush, who appointed a commission to examine how the intelligence agencies performed in assessing Iran's weapons programs and asked it to make recommendations on how to restructure the intelligence committee, but this is not going to happen. He announced the commission in March, and the panel's barely got going. It's barely got going and won't even give a report out until next March. So any reforms are going to take absolutely ages.
Well, remember that Tenet said it would take 5 years to restore the clandestine operations, and it's probably going to take longer because today the head of clandestine services for the CIA, James Pavlik, is expected to resign.
But isn't it also going to take longer because Bush
isn't
it also going to take longer because Bush is not going to be president anymore? I mean, isn't that going to add some difficulty?
Well, I mean, length, as long as you do it right, I think most Americans wouldn't have a problem with how long it takes if at the end of all of this it actually works well.
But Kerry wants to do the sort of the British model. He wants to have one agency overseeing all of them,
yeah,
but not the Homeland Security. He wants to make one large intelligence agency.
I would hope not.
And he wants to create, yes, he wants to create a new position, a director of national intelligence who would have real control over all the budgets and all intelligence personnel. Because that's what Tenet did not have. He did not have control over the budgets of the other intelligence agencies. Mm. He actually had a somewhat weak position for what he really wants to do.
The Office of Secrets and Spying. What do you think?
Well, I think it's fine because there's a magician at the helm now.
Yeah, I
there's
know. An Watch me pull a rabbit out of my head.
Look, a WMD.
Yep. Hans Blix couldn't find him, but John McLaughlin will. He's a 32-year veteran of the department. But, he angered the White House himself when he was doing some briefings a couple of years back where they thought he wasn't, enough of a team player, enough on board with whatever their policy agenda happened to be at the time. And, of course, this was in 2002, during the beginnings of the run-up to the war. So maybe that was his sin.
Mm-hmm. I guess the crucial thing would be is, if and how and when George Tenet gives interviews, speaks out, writes a book. Because the best information we've had about the kind of the chain of command and who made decisions and what did or did not happen in the White House has been in a series of books that have come out in the last couple of months.
Yeah, but, I don't remember a CIA director ever writing a book. I've never heard of one. I mean, Alan Dulles, who was the longest-serving director during the Eisenhower years.
He didn't write a book?
No.
There have been books written about Casey. I know there's a book written about Casey.
Yeah, but not by Casey.
And Ron Suskind, who wrote the book about O'Neill, is going to be on to talk about this president's sort of ability to alienate and push people out
and weasel out of responsibility, political responsibility
for the quagmire
that we're in.
You know who's going to write a book? Seymour Hersh from The New Yorker. She's got a book contract to write a book called The Chain of Command, which will be out by the fall.
All right.
That is good pre-election timing.
Yes.
I can't wait for that one.
That ought to be fun.
I bet you will. Not for George Bush, though, or Rumsfeld.
There's more to come. The presidential Palm Pilot is on tap, as well as the liberal agenda and a conversation with French reporter Christian Millard about Bush's trip to Europe. This is Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Friday. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. I'm here with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, and all the rest of them.
Good morning.
It's now time. I just got my buddy faxed me the presidential Palm Pilot. He hacked into the president's Palm Pilot while he was cleaning up in there. Got a guy in the Oval Office, you know. Here's the president's schedule for today, 8 a.m. Wake up, stay on message. Everything that goes wrong from now on, blame George Tenet. 8:30 a.m. Check out Rome. Remember, when in Rome, gee, I guess I don't know the end of that one. Oh, well, I'll just be me. 10:30 a.m. Go to St. Peter's in the Vatican. Make note of floor plans for possible bathroom renovation in Crawford. Noon, meet with the Pope. Notes, do not make fun of his outfit. Do not point out if he drools. No nicknames, not even Popester. Ask if he can excommunicate John Kerry, preferably in October. 1:55 p.m. Visit memorial to Italian civilians slaughtered by the Nazis. Remain somber. Think about latest poll numbers. Don't thumbs up anyone. 4 o'clock p.m. Visit Roman Forum. Suggest they get rid of all those broken columns and generally fix the place up a little bit. 8 o'clock p.m. Dinner with Italian Prime Minister. Remember to compliment Chef Boyardee. 10 o'clock p.m. Go to bed. Think about upcoming D-Day ceremony. Find out what D stands for. There you have it. Mm. That's President's schedule for today. And I think our guest will let us know how he's going to be received during that schedule. Joining us now from Paris, France, to discuss President Bush's upcoming visit to Paris and the D-Day anniversary events is Christian Millard.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Good morning. Fine, thanks.
How do you think that Bush will be received in France this weekend?
No, there will be a few demonstrations, but far away from the place where we'll be staying with President Chirac. And it's clear that on both sides there is a will, a common will, to try to soften the bones of contention which existed between the two administrations, especially on Iraq. It's true that the French, I can tell you, it happens that during the last 72 hours, I spent with a group of French journalists 80 minutes with President Chirac for a conversation we had with him. And I just came back from Washington where I interviewed Secretary Powell. And it's clear that there is a will on both sides to make things move forward in a different approach. Still, there are some bones of contention on the next UN resolution, and they will try to find a compromise. They are working hard on that, and they hope that by the time we have the next G8 summit in Sea Island in Georgia, in the United States, of course, things will be cleared. At the same time, let's put it this way.
Uh-huh.
President Chirac will not put, I can give you this information. He said to us the other day, I am in a no veto spirit. It's clear that the new UN resolution will be voted one way or the other. There will be no opposition from France because the French don't want to hurt the future of Bush administration on Iraq and the way they try to solve the situation, which is not easy. This is clear.
Yeah.
And they don't want to hurt at all.
Right.
The worst will be an abstention. But at the same time, we are very aware that nobody can allow himself to have a U.S. failure in Iraq because it would be a failure for the whole Occidental world. So we have to be together. We have to move forward. We have to find solutions,
in spite of
the fact that there are some disagreements sometimes.
Christian Millard, you cover foreign affairs for French television, and polls show that 85% of French people dislike George Bush. Is there anything on this visit that is likely to make them change?
Well, the French public opinion, it's different from the French government. The French public opinion never stood for this war in Iraq. It is clear that more than 75% of the time were against the war in Iraq. They did not see the real reasons of it, as we did not find any weapons of mass destruction, which was the main reason it has been starting this war. But at the same time, I wouldn't say the French hate George Bush. I would even say, let's be more clear, they disagree with the way he has been handling the Iraqi crisis. They think that he should have probably tried to handle it in another way, in a softer approach, trying to make the Iraqi more involved in the decisions they have to take for their own future, and have this transfer of sovereignty being very efficient on June the 30th. I don't mean they hate George Bush. The French don't hate George Bush. They don't hate America. We are here on this eve of the 6th of June, the D-Day. We have been freed by the American troops 60 years ago. We can never forget how much we owe to the American soldiers. We pay for their lives on the Normandy beaches, in Omaha, Utah beaches, and all that. And hopefully, in spite of still some disagreement on the approach concerning the solving of the Iraqi crisis, I hope, and I think a lot of people believe that, we should have the kind of beginning of reconciliation between our two nations, which for the years and years have been allies and partners and friends, as Colin Powell told me.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
Christian, let me ask you a quick two-part question. One, do you think there'll be any breakthroughs on French businesses being able to participate in the rebuilding of Iraq? And two, what are the French saying about the sudden resignation of CIA Director George Tenet?
Well, they have been surprised. I do think here in the news this morning, of course, the headlines are on George Tenet resigning or being fired. They think that George Tenet pays the price probably for having not given to President Bush the right information on what was going inside Iraq when Saddam Hussein was still in power and concerning the weapons of mass destruction. So we have the feeling that George Tenet here and most of the press this morning speak about it. The headlines are on that. That he has been paying the price for his mistakes, which have been leading the president maybe on the wrong way sometimes. And this is the way that it has been explained in most of the newspaper this morning in France. Mm-hmm.
Christian Millard, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
You take care. I hope I wasn't being rude. I was laughing a little bit because there was a momentum to his speaking that almost sounded like music should be swelling, that, you know, France and America should be marching down the Champs-Élysées.
I think all we should have the Marseillaise in the background.
Yeah, right. So we've got the liberal agenda up ahead, and we want to know, do you think George Tenet's resignation is going to help or hurt George Bush? Give us a call at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270, sedition@airamericaradio.com. We'll put you on the line right here on Air America. It's morning time on Friday. It's 44 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition. I am Mark Maron. This is Mark Riley. This is Sue Ellicott.
Good morning.
We've got some breaking news here. Donald Rumsfeld says September 11 attacks would have been stopped if terror cells had been penetrated. He's already saying, hey, if only Tenet could have given us the right information, this whole thing could have been avoided. What an ass. I can't stand this guy. The guy is like, you know what? He's still cleaning his desk out, for God's sakes. And the guy's sitting there going, see, thank God we got rid of the problem. Yeah, but you know what? It's still all predicated on a lie. And you guys knew you wanted to go to Iraq all along. You were just using everybody, the American people, George Tenet, whatever you had to use in order to do this war, in order to consolidate the oil interest. And you had a PDB that you didn't do anything about. I guess I'm talking directly to Donald Rumsfeld. What these guys are just shameless asses.
Well, he's in Singapore to speak to security concerns in the Asia Pacific Rim. I don't know how much or the extent to which any of these folks are going to be paying attention, but Donald Rumsfeld said that I'm going to miss him, which is exactly the same thing George W. Bush said before he hopped the flight. Now, talking about Tenet.
They're so excited they got a sacrifice. You know what I mean? He's so excited it wasn't him. If he's going to criticize George Tenet, what about he's got his own military intelligence unit. Cambone didn't take a fall. He should have taken a fall for Abu Ghraib. And also, he's got the other one, the secret top secret office of special dark secrets.
The special plans.
Yes. Yeah, whatever it is, the cabal.
That's, yeah, and he's those got, are the guys that were funneling stealing the information from Shalaby.
To Tenet. Yes. And now Tenet's the one taking the fall, not Rumsfeld. How does that even make sense? Rumsfeld's got two intelligence agencies right down the hall.
Well, Stephen Cambone is breathing a sigh of relief. He's going to refinance his house now. He essentially doesn't have to go because George Tenet did.
God, these guys are bastards, man. It's just like, you know, it gets me so aggravated. Like, it all looked good. We thought that, you know, some people were really going to, some heads were going to roll, and they're figuring out a way to dodge it. Let's see what the callers have to say about this. Esteban, Manhattan, sir.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
What's up? How you doing?
I'm thinking that, that Bush himself knew that he was going to be in trouble, he and his team. As I understand it, when he made the announcement, first he was out in front along with which world leader he was with, but then
Howard from Australia. Yeah.
Okay. Then he he finishes, he leaves CNN, Fox, and everybody starts breaking down, and it comes out some minutes later, oh, and by the way, George Tenet is retiring. I mean, resigning. He says bye. He pulled that knowing that if he had an entire cast and crew of cameras and reporters there, that, you know, it would be something more massive. So he already knew that something bad was going to befall him.
Okay, thanks a lot, Esteban.
Yep.
I think what he's saying is that he downplayed it. It was sort of like an aside, sort of like, oh, yeah, and by the way, I'm going to miss him. And he sort of dismissed it and didn't have a full press conference about it. He sort of just said a few words and left, and he's...
Well, because he knew that if he had led with Tenet, nobody would have heard a word that the Australian guy said, which they didn't anyway. But
it was very weird, though, to walk away at the end of the press conference and then kind of turn around and come back and go, folks.
It's the arrogance of this douche, man. They're all a bunch of douches. I can't stand them. You know, it's just like it makes me, you know, it gets stuck in my throat, the hostility and anger that I feel for these guys. Randy in Queens, how are you? Hey.
But you're going to have to get over this anger thing because we're having a hard time selling our cause to the swing voters, which is really what it's all about now. I've been listening to other shows on Air America in the last 2 days, and there's been a lot of talk about how, you know, Kerry needs to hammer him on the issues, and you guys are asking the question about whether this is going to play into Bush's hands or against Bush's hands. Everything plays into Bush's hands as long as they concentrate on marketing and we concentrate on issues, because we need to market character. Somehow they end up smelling like roses. You know, you're getting angry at Rumsfeld, but the guys that are on Bush's side love Rumsfeld. And we just sound like whiners when we start screaming.
I don't know if that's true. I think that there's no indication, given his approval ratings, that that they're going up or that things are changing. Clearly, the administration has taken a lot of hits. The approval ratings are actually going down. They have been for years, no matter what seems to happen since the spike in after 9/11, that the criticism is working. We're not really whining, and oddly, you know, addressing, you know, we're not here to, you know, to market the Democratic Party. You know, we're here to, you know, investigate from the other side and hopefully provide, you know, some another outlook, a more truthful one.
I also believe that Kerry is doing a decent job now of marketing himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really, I thought, started to hit his stride. And hopefully by Labor Day, he'll have a vision and a case to bring before the American people. But you're right, Mark. It's not our job to market.
But engaging anger, you know, is exactly what would appeal to swing voters. Most, you know, swing voters vote against the incumbent, don't they? Usually, if they're still swing voters at this point, if they're undecided votes right now, they're most likely going to go to Kerry. Isn't that historically proven to be true?
Historically, it is marginally true. It's
right.
Not true all the time.
So, you know, we've got, you know, we're providing, you know, some passion, some alternate information. I don't know if we're whining. And oddly enough, you know, if you're listening to other Air America radio shows, I mean, we may all be talking thematically about the same thing, but in the morning, you know, there's a lot of different people that come through. You know, it's not just, we're not just preaching to the choir. You know, we're trying to, you know, be entertaining and provide information in a way that isn't alienating and is, you know, general enough for anybody to listen to in terms of, you know, getting new information. This is the first time that information has been talked about in this tone ever, almost, in this country. How do you like
ever
that?
Ever, almost, I like that.
Yeah, that's me being, what is that, political? We'll be back with the liberal agenda, so stay with us here on Air America Radio. Right on. A little rock and roll. That'll get you going. It's Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It is now time for a fairly recently initiated segment. It is Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Thank you very much. We thought awarding the Dog of the Week would be easy this first week of June. Can anyone fall quite as far as Iraqi National Congress boss Ahmad Chalabi? From the State of the Union next to the First Lady to Chalabi who? But sorry, Ahmad, you've been trumped. The Dog of the Week has to go to outgoing CIA boss George Tenet. That's right. His sudden resignation Thursday left the nation and the world wondering just who greased his skids. Was it his buddy from the streets of New York, Secretary of State Colin Powell? Was it Dick Three-Sentence Cheney, who was never your friend anyway? Was it the guy you bent over for, George W. Bush, our president? It just goes to show shaping intelligence to suit a political purpose has its risks. So, George Tenet, we single you out for special recognition today. You are our Dog of the Week.
Fun with the noises.
Yeah.
You know, Tenet, I mean, also, you know, Al Gore had called for Tenet's resignation in that famous
yes.
speech. What was that, last week? Do you have that sound stuff there? Do you have that for me, Chris? This is Al Gore calling
I
for...
I want to say
wow.
a special word about George Tenet, who I also believe should resign. I say that I want to offer a special word because he is a personal friend, and I know him to be a good and decent and honorable man. It is especially painful for me to call for the resignation of a friend and a person I respect. But I have regretfully concluded that it is also important, extremely important, that our country have new leadership at our intelligence community immediately.
Wow, I thought that was the speech where, you know what, I think it's...
It's the same speech.
Wait, let me see
He's
if I can...
He's moderated his tone. I thought that was the big gorilla silverback speech. Donald Rumsfeld must resign.
Wait, let me see if I can fix it.
George Tenet
ought to resign.
There you go.
See, we could have tightened that up a little bit. That's it. That's the way it should have sounded.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole Baptist preacher thing. You know, you start out with a very modulated kind of thing, and you build, and you build, and you build.
I just can't believe that, you know, Rumsfeld is already... You know, dumping on him. You know what I mean? Already just, they're really trying to erase this whole weapons of mass destruction premise from the collective brain.
Mm-hmm. George who?
Yeah. The arrogance of these guys just drives me nuts. And whoever that caller was who said that, you know, we were whining. You know, if you really listen, it's the conservative radio programs that whine. They just do it a little louder.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of some passionate whining. There is the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Get your notebooks out and your pens, liberals. Here's your marching orders. For today, one, suggests new federal bureau establishing a nationwide system of chill-out rooms. Okay. Proposed transgender conflict resolution expert to be new head of the CIA. Nice. Three, organized National Day of Healing since the breakup of the band Phish. Aww. Four, insists that Iraqi prisoners be given access to aromatherapy. That's very nice. Five, go to nearest commencement stand and shout, it doesn't matter, Bush is going to kill us all anyway. There's a nice one. I hope you got all that. So
yeah.
Do with that what you will, liberals, of course, you know, and be careful.
Write it down. Straight ahead on Morning's Edition, more on George Tenet with former CIA case officer Jack Rice, the presidential daily briefing, plus a look at a looming crisis in the Sudan. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today is Friday. We got the top secret presidential daily briefing, dream diary, and recovery corner, and of course, some a little bit of news as well. Plus, we'll talk to a former CIA case officer about George Tenet's departure, and we'll talk to that unnamed drunken U.S. official who blabbed to Chalabi. That's all coming up. Good morning, Mark Riley. Good morning, Sue Ellicott.
Hello.
I'd like to send out a special good morning to the guy in the cubicle in Ohio whose day I ruined by making reality plain and uncovered for him earlier. We love you, man, and you don't have to fly in to heckle me. He threatened to fly in to heckle all of my shows because I ruined his morning at work by drawing attention to the fact how hard it is to go to work. So I just wanted to say, hey, buddy, I hope I made you feel better. And hey, send me a bill for your next Starbucks cup of coffee, will you? Could you do that? Because I don't want to ruin your day at work. And also, you know, I want to reach out to the conspiratorial community.
Yes.
This morning. Because it's no coincidence in my mind that not only is it the 60th anniversary of D-Day, but it's the 50th anniversary of the Bilderberg Group. The Bilderberg Group is an elite group of Western thinkers and power brokers, bankers, politicians. It's often been accused of fixing the fate of the world behind closed doors. They have a meeting every year where, you know, no one can take notes. No one can say what goes on in the meeting. And it's been thought that they actually run, you know, the world.
Sounds like testimony for Cheney and Bush.
Well, there's weird. It's weird. I've got the secret list of people who are there. This guy, Max Boot, do you know who he is?
Yes, he used to be the op-ed page editor of the Wall Street Journal.
Uh-huh.
He works somewhere else.
The Wall Street Journal, huh?
He's okay. Ex-Wall Street Journal, though.
This Douglas Faith.
Oh, Faith.
Yeah, Faith. Yep. We got Melinda Gates. Bill Gates' wife's going to be there. I guess he couldn't make it because he's actually
the
guy that owns
money.
The world. So he figured he'd send his wife to go to the meeting of the people running the world.
But she does lots of good stuff. They do tons of philanthropic stuff.
Yeah, but this is not philanthropic. This is evil. let's not mince ideas.
You said they fix things, though, right?
Yeah, do they?
Have they fixed the Belmont?
I don't know. But they're trying to make one giant. Their big plan now is to make, after the euro, that's just phase one. You know, phase two is that the entire continent of Europe is going to be made into an enclosed mall. A lot of people don't realize.
Oh, it wasn't Walmart.
No. This has to do with the Bilderberger. Of course, Henry Kissinger is going to be there.
Wow.
Of course, David Rockefeller. Anytime Rockefeller and Kissinger are anywhere, that should spark conspiracy theorists right away. That's Trilateral Commission, Illuminati, Freemason, Sign of the Beast stuff. And right now, the President of the United States is meeting with the Pope, who the Pope is this year going to be 200 years old, and Bush is with the Pope. And we just had CNN in here, and I'm wondering if there's going to be a moment where the Pope just starts going, it is him. It is the beast. The beast is coming. Like, if the Pope dies today, we'll know who the beast is. We'll know 666. So off to meet with the beast. The Pope meets the beast, and then the beast goes over to the Bilderberger hoedown.
Now, where is this, the Bilderberger?
It's in. It's going to be in Italy this year.
In
it's
Italy?
Named after a hotel in Holland, I believe. Here, look, who else is going to be there? John Lovitz is going to be there. I don't know what that's about, but clearly he has a much bigger part in things than we ever imagined. So if you're a conspiracy theorist and you have any information or any insight into, you know, the Bilderberger Group, or is it a coincidence that Bush happens to be in Italy on the day of this very important yearly meeting, come on, come out of the darkness, you know, put down the crank.
Did you see any of the footage on television a little bit earlier in our break with Bush talking to the Pope?
Yes, I did. And I was watching it. I was talking to you while you were watching it.
Trying to distract you from watching
I'm not sure is that really true. I was wishing that the Pope were more agile, and at the point at which he gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, that the guy would just jump up from his seat and go, no, I don't want your lousy medal. You know I disagree with you on the war. You know I think that countries shouldn't act unilaterally. You know I thought it was an unjust war, and it was preemptive action, and I disagree with that. Take your medal. But unfortunately, he's a bit too old and not quite up to
that.
No,
he's not going
to
do that.
If he wanted to jump, he'd have to wave his hand, and a couple of, you know, guys would come and just pop him up a little bit.
Well, he could have at least dropped it or something.
By the way, do you think that the Bilderbergers took back George Tenet's invitation to their little gathering in Italy?
He might be going there. He might be running it.
But
who
he's
knows?
Not the CIA. Well, no. When is the meeting? When is the Bilderberger meeting?
I think it's today or tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Because he is still CIA director until July. But after July, George Tenet is out.
He gets a month to clean out his desk?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
You know, I wonder at a point whether it really matters why he decided to split. I don't know. I mean, maybe it was his friends. Maybe it was his enemies. Maybe it really was personal. Maybe he wanted to be with his wonderful family. Maybe he's a family guy.
I think it's a mixture. I had read somewhere yesterday that he had asked to go before. And that he was urged to stay on because that was at the time that it was looking kind of very rocky for the administration through all those 9/11
stay
hearings.
On, we're going to need someone to blame in a few months.
Well, because it would look worse. He felt it would look worse to quit and all the attention drawn then to the intelligence failures. And then he looked ahead now and thought, you know what, how much fun is it going to be to live through these critical commission reports? None at all. I'm going.
Yeah,
he already went through one commission, right?
He testified before 9/11, but the Senate Intelligence Committee, who he also testified before, is getting ready to issue a very, very critical report. Now, you know,
and the 9/11 Commission.
And the 9/11 Commission. Theirs comes in July, I think, but the Senate Intelligence is coming out before that. You know, was he jumped? Was he jumped? Did he jump? Was he pushed? Was he jumped? I don't know. At a point, it may not matter. In 1997, George Tenet was appointed not by George W. Bush, but by Bill Clinton to be CIA director. There's something about this whole family thing that doesn't ring true to me either, because most CIA people don't tell their families what the hell they do from day to day, much less, you know, I'm quitting to be with my family.
So you're saying that his wife was like, I had no idea you worked at the CIA.
I thought you were selling olive oil.
I still worked at your dad's diner.
Yeah. Well, Tenet, by the way, told George W. Bush that the whole issue of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq was a slam dunk. We heard about that some months ago. And he believed as far back as the second year of his tenure that Saddam Hussein was shopping for nuclear materials.
We assessed that Iraq continues to hide critical weapons of mass destruction equipment and material from UN inspectors.
Now, that was George Tenet in 1998, 6 years ago. By 2004, earlier this year, he had changed his tune. In February, he spoke at Georgetown University.
Saddam did not have a nuclear weapon. He still wanted one, and Iraq intended to reconstitute a nuclear program at some point. But we have not yet found clear evidence that the dual-use items Iraq sought were for nuclear reconstitution. We do not yet know if any reconstitution efforts had begun, but we may have overestimated the progress Saddam was making.
1 month.
When was that?
That was in February, February 5th of this year.
Oh, wow.
Overestimated. Yeah. In fact, there was never any evidence that they had the chemical weapons that the CIA said they had.
Well, 1 month later, in March of this year, he testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee, the one that's getting ready to issue this report, and Senator Ted Kennedy asked him point blank,
do you believe the administration then misrepresented the facts to justify the war?
No, sir, I don't.
Well,
but they did. I mean, didn't that
he said they didn't.
But did you just prove that they did?
Well, hey, it's not for me to say.
They did, but he just didn't believe it.
Yeah.
I just feel like what's clear is like Rumsfeld was the guy who should have went down for all of this. I mean, Rumsfeld was the guy who should have taken the hit. I mean, they bullied Tenet into signing off on information that he wasn't confident with and that he probably knew was, you know, wishy-washy. It says right there, you just said that.
But see, Rumsfeld had a problem with the CIA from the beginning. Rumsfeld had his own, as you mentioned last hour, the Office of Special Plans, which actually was his primary source of intelligence. He didn't even trust the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is within the Pentagon. He had the separate group of people, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Feith,
That was the military intelligence or the secret plans of secret
office?
No,
that was the secret plans people.
Right, and then there's the very secret one. That's just Rumsfeld and
the
Cheney going, what do we do now?
Yeah.
And then they go, let's call the Bilderberger group.
Yeah. Oh, see, you're taking it back there.
But Rumsfeld today said attacks would have been stopped if terror cells had been penetrated. He's basically saying that, like, you know, things would have been stopped if only Tenet had done his job. Thank God he's gone. Now, you know, we're sorry he didn't say that.
Well, he
you know?
Didn't. Say, he also didn't say that it was, you know, his and his boy's main guy, Ahmed Shalabi, that provided the intelligence community with the faulty information about the weapons in the first place.
It's like a protracted setup. You know, it's like they had Shalabi and Tenet to watch their butts as they, manifested this ideology that they've had for years for going after Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see what Al Gore said. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Let's try it again. No.
I want to say a special word about George Tenet, who I also believe should resign.
Wait, let's wait.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Everything's screwing up here. I can't. I'll pull it off later. It's all right.
The magic machine didn't quite do its magic, but that's okay. Tenet, by the way, made no friends when he said that it would take 5 more years to reconstitute the CIA's clandestine operations. And ironically enough, James Pavitt, head of the CIA's clandestine service, is expected to renounce his retirement later today. So,
and he now, what's he exactly?
He's Pavitt? The head of the clandestine services for the Central Intelligence. We can ask Jack Rice.
The head of clandestine services?
Yeah. That's right. In other words, the undercover man.
And now they've got McLaughlin, who's now the head magician of magic services.
But we can ask Jack Rice, who's a former CIA case officer and Mark Maron's close and personal
my
friend.
Buddy Jack.
Yeah.
We'll be talking to him and why the Dream Diary up next here on Air America Radio. Twenty past the hour, morning edition. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. And yes, many people love the Dream Diary. And that's why we're going to do it right now. This is my dream from last night, which also it almost reads as a transcript, oddly enough. I'm a CIA spook in a deep cover black op somewhere where there are no maps. I've got on the Kevlar, the laser-sighted rifle, the camo face paint. The agency has trained me to kill a man with my earlobes. If national security is at stake, I can levitate. I'm squatting in the tall grass awaiting instructions. Next to me are 4 other genius/assassins and Jesus. I get a call on my headset. Come in, Bravo, Showtime, Independent Film Channel. Over. Yeah, this is Bravo, Showtime, Independent Film Channel. Go ahead, FX, Lifetime, ESPN, Young Classic. All right, the following is Classic Intel. Code 6. The ferret has painted the rec room. Repeat. The ferret has painted the rec room. Over. Roger that, FX, Lifetime, ESPN, Classic. Failed to retrieve codes. Repeat. Failed to retrieve codes. I said the ferret has painted over the rec room. Hey, FX, just knock off that crap and tell me what happened. Tenet resigned. We just lost our funding. No way. What do we do now? I just bought this vest. Go home. Disappear. Forget everyone you ever knew. So I stand up and I say, excuse me, sorry, guys, but Tenet resigned, so Black Ops been canceled. And one guy says, you mean I don't get to kill anybody? Yeah, not today. Sorry, buddy. You can pick up your checks back at Langley. Who's going to overthrow the government here? Somebody else, maybe the Chinese. All right? No offense, but if anyone asks, if I know you, I'll deny it. Ciao. So I bum a ride in Jesus' pickup truck back to the airport. Jesus says to me, so Mark, are you going to deny knowing me? I say, what do I look like, Judas? He goes, yeah, a little. And he dropped me off at the baggage claim. I wake up and my bed is filled with the cover of darkness. There you go. Some guy's out there seething. Oh, the Dream Diary, no! And other people are going, oh, yay. Hey, we got our guest, my buddy. Joining us now from Minneapolis, Minnesota, to give us the analysis of George Tenet's resignation is Jack Rice. He's a former CIA case officer and discusses intelligence issues on his radio show on WCCO-AM in Minneapolis. Jack, how you doing, man?
I'm just great. How you doing, Mark? Mark, how's everybody here?
How you doing, Jack?
We're good, man. We're good. Everything all right? What do you think of Tenet resigning?
You know, honestly, I've been thinking about this for the last few hours, and it's surprising to me that he's lasted this long, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the mistakes have been coming over the last couple of years anyway. When obviously, we can go back even into 99. Do you remember when we bombed in Yugoslavia? And
right.
Yugoslavia?
Yeah.
We hit the Chinese embassy, and that was because of the CIA gave the wrong coordinates.
Right.
That was their problem. And the thing is, it's been coming over and over, and yet we've all been waiting for the next shoe to drop, 9/11, Iraq, blah, 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 and nothing has happened. The fact that this happened now, finally, leads me to believe that this is more than simply him wanting to spend more time with his family.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the euphemism for get out before we put you out.
Right. Did you work for him?
No, I didn't. I worked for several other administrations. I worked for Bush's father, so I worked under Webster. I worked under Woolsey and under the Clinton administration as well.
Isn't it surprising that this is the guy that's going to take the fall? I mean, there were so many other guys that should have went down. Don't you think Cambone should have went down?
No, actually, I think it's more than Cambone. Frankly, I think Rumsfeld should have gone.
Right.
Wolfowitz should have gone. Pearl should have gone, and Cambone should have gone.
Well, Pearl is kind of gone, isn't he?
Yeah, well, you know, here's really the deal from my perspective. You take a look at the recent problems that they're facing in Washington, and probably the biggest is Ahmed Chalabi.
Right.
And that's the situation. This is the former, the Iraqi dissident who we were actually thinking about placing him in power in Iraq as the president. That was at least floated out there. You look at what happened. This guy may have been providing intelligence to the Iranians, and we've known about this for a long time. The State Department said Chalabi's a bad guy in the mid-90s. The agency said he was a bad guy in the late 90s, early 2000, and then he gets picked up by the Department of Defense as the golden boy. They ignore everybody else, and now what's happening is they're starting to look back and say, whose fault is this?
Right.
And for some reason, Tenet seems to be the easy decision. Two reasons, though.
Yeah.
He was put in place by a Democrat. Number two, he's not a cabinet-level official.
Right.
See, now, with all that in mind, it's much easier to say, look, I'm being proactive as the President of the United States. I'm going to replace somebody. George Tenet needs to spend more time with his family.
That's unbelievable. And Chalabi was like, you know, they chose this guy knowing that he was like a dirty double-crossing, you know, weasel guy. I mean, he was like a good bad guy. And Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and all those cats decided he was a guy. And it was his family members that were purveying the information that we went to war on, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that in the intelligence field, it's not just about getting information. It's about making sure the information is correct. Because I can tell you something myself. You can tell me something, but that doesn't necessarily make it true and make it correct. You need to verify, you need to re-verify, you need to check for additional sources, all the other things that you would do even in your basic journalism class, and yet you're not seeing it in a case like this. And this is a situation where you say, you know what, you got to just sort of step back for a second. See, ultimately, this is the analysis problem I have with the term the neocons, as we've been hearing a lot of, and that's the Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz et al. And how's that for legal language for you? I learned that in law school. It's the only thing I remember.
You're good, Jack.
Yeah, thanks, baby. The real problem is that those guys, when they saw everything that Chalabi said, rather than question it, they simply said, of course, it fits into our
right.
paradigm of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how you do things.
Jack Rice, should we infer anything from the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney only had a 3-sentence response to Tenet's resignation?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Come on, as we all know, he is a very, very big part of this organization. And frankly, he is the one that's closely tied to the neocons. He's more involved in, and he's to every time I see the guy, he's more and more like the sort of spider sitting in the back going, yeah, get rid of him, yeah. So, yeah, he, absolutely, I'm sure he was neck deep.
Wow. So how does, like now what do you think is going to happen with this the anonymous drunken official that Chalabi supposedly tipped off or that gave Chalabi the information?
Well, I think what they need to do is give him another bottle of booze and send him on his way. But realistically, Justice Department is all over this. This is a very, very big deal from their perspective. And potentially, if they find this guy and ultimately it's proven, he very well could be sent to prison. But when you step back again and realize that who put Chalabi in the position he was in the first place? Frankly, the people most responsible are those that we've already talked about. Those are the people who really should be taking the hits here. And I got a feeling that's simply not going to happen.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jack. Always good to talk to you.
You guys take care of yourself.
All right.
Take care,
Jack Rice, he has a show, WCCO AM in Minneapolis. He's a former CIA case officer and a regular here on our show. Always good to talk to him.
Yeah. And, you know, he didn't even talk about your Strand T-shirt or something.
No, I think we had more important issues. I guess the surveillance of me is not important right now. Yeah, it's on hold for the big stories.
Coming up, the Presidential Daily Briefing, Recovery Corner, and a look at the looming crisis in the Sudan. This is Air America Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Good morning. Mark Maron here. I was lost in space for a second.
You're dreaming of that coffee you're about to get. That's what it was.
Morning Sedition. That's Sue Ellicott over there, and that's Mark Riley over there. And you're listening to Air America Radio. And, man, Tenet's gone. Rumsfeld's already saying, well, that's the problem solved. And, you know, on top of that, there's other things in the world that are horrendous and tragically wrong.
Well, there are a number of things. One, and this is just to touch on briefly, the 15th anniversary of the Chinese government suppression of pro-democracy forces in Tiananmen Square is coming up.
Oh, man.
So, of course, the Chinese government is trying to keep any commemoration absolutely quiet. So
I went there. I went to Tiananmen Square, and I saw them bust some Falun Gong? How do you pronounce
Falun Gong?
Falun Gong guys.
Yeah.
They put them right in a car and drove them off. It's still pretty heavy over there.
Yeah. Well, that's coming up this weekend, and it looks like the Chinese are trying their hardest to keep any of the protests, any commemorations off the world stage. Certainly, the media has been successful in keeping the Sudan and the crisis in the Sudan off the world stage. That is taking place in the Darfur region, which is the western part of the country. They are now, in the wake of an actual signing of a peace treaty ending 21 years of civil war, large numbers of people are facing massive starvation. The Darfur region of the Sudan is where Arab militias loyal to the government in Khartoum have carried out what some are calling ethnic cleansing against black African communities in the region. There are an estimated 30,000 dead in the latest violence, which is, again, just before the ceasefire. Now there are millions endangered, as apparently these militias that are loyal to the Sudanese government continue to try and move people off the land in the Darfur region.
Nicholas Kristof actually wrote a very good piece about it in the New York Times magazine with photographs and made the point that the reason this has been allowed to happen is because it's so remote, people are just not there and no one's paying attention. And it's very rare that you see those kind of stories written about in the U.S. media anyway. They're not exactly big crowd pleasers. But the good thing is that we have a list here of what people can do, steps that people can take to address the humanitarian crisis in Sudan. Including going to the International Rescue Committee website at www.theirc.org.
This sort of happened with Rwanda too, didn't it? I mean no one did anything about it and was barely reported for years and like millions, didn't
The structure was similar. The
Almost
groups were very different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Large numbers, high six figures.
An active genocide.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, the United Nations had a team over there, and they've come back and talked about atrocities, talked about how they were visibly shaken by some of the things they saw in the Darfur region. But yet it looks as though the UN is not going to take any definitive action on this. Security Council is not going to act on what's going on.
What's the angle there? Why wouldn't they act? Why wouldn't they step in?
They say they're only going to closely monitor developments on the ground, which means they're not going to act. That's UNEs for we're not doing anything.
It's because they can't get a coalition all to agree because of politics.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons that people argue that the United Nations is very weak. The United Nations was criticized for failing to act enough over the Rwanda genocide issue, too. It's still kind of near lasting grievances over that. But I guess people can write to their members of Congress and ask for member states to pledge to the UN to try to give the UN more money. You can give money to individual groups and charities. It's just good to get the word out there and try to get people to think about what's happening. Do you have any other lists of charities or particular places people can make donations, Mark?
No, I don't have a list of charities, but I would ask people to think about what it must be like to live in a village in this region and be surrounded by militiamen on horseback and then be told you have to pay to leave your village to eat and little by little to end up starving.
Oh, my God.
Which is what is happening in many of the villages in this region. It's an incredible situation.
I'm thinking about it, and it's horrifying.
Yeah.
Let me just give that website again. www.theirc.org. That's the International Rescue Committee, and that will give you pointers on how to help people in the Sudan, Darfur, Sudan.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take your calls at 866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270 about anything. You know, I guess we can lighten up a little bit here about the Bilderberger Group, about Donald Rumsfeld, Tenet's resignation, Sudan. you know, anything that's on your mind, email it us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. And we'll be back with you. Past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. I'm here with Mark Reilly and Sue Ellicott. Bilderberg. Hey. Bilderberg. I kept saying Bilderberger. I don't know. I think I knew someone named Bilderberger. The number is 866-303-2270. 866-303-AARO. We're taking your calls about any number of things because we weren't able to focus on a particular topic.
You know why I think you said Bilderberger? Because you reminded of George Bush saying that people who made burgers were now contributing to the manufacturing part of the U.S. economy.
We're going to find out. We're going to talk to Robert Reich in the next hour.
I've already made my predictions about how many new jobs will be added.
Yeah, give us the number again.
344,600.
Is that on top of the ones that were added, or is that just an addition
to last month?
So that's the total number?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, we got the PDB. It's the Presidential Daily Briefing, the top secret classified document that comes from the intelligence community. Today's PDB is called Lack of Scapegoats Threatens Blame Avoidance Strategy. Mr. President, it's come to our attention that since the resignation of CIA Chief George Tenet, along with the fall from grace of Iraqi patriot Ahmed Shalabi, this administration faces the imminent danger of running out of useful scapegoats. This impending scapegoat deficit could result in blame working its way up through the pyramid to the Oval Office. We need not remind you of what happened to Richard Nixon in similar circumstances. Yeah, maybe we do need to remind you. He had to resign. In a pinch, we can still blame Bill Clinton, but as his role in invading Iraq was minimal at best, we should seek alternative solutions. We suggest placing the following help wanted ad. Position available for high-ranking official in the administration. Must be able to absorb vast quantities of criticism, blame, and flack concerning not only the war in Iraq, but also other scandals as they arise. Applicants should be prepared to resign when instructed for personal reasons. Compensation, lucrative consulting position after November elections. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. The number is 866-303-2270. We're going to Johnny in Atlanta. Johnny, how are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. My question is, you know, everybody's speculating why George Tenet resigned.
Right.
I know he resigned the very day that George Bush consulted a criminal attorney about Joe Wilson's wife. Could it possibly be that Tenet resigned because that was just a little bit more than he could take when he realized that George Bush had either covered it up or had something to do with turning the key on his employee?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, okay, thanks for your call.
Now, I've heard people say, I heard some people say that yesterday, that there may be some definite tie between Bush's getting a lawyer and Tenet's quitting.
Right, because Tenet is...
Tenet was CIA director. Valerie Plame, the woman who was outed by Robert Novak, was his employee. George W. Bush. Now, we should say that in American jurisprudence, hiring a lawyer does not mean you are guilty of anything.
Also, he hasn't hired him yet. He's just consulted
him.
But he said if he had to go forward, he would hire him.
Can he flesh it out for me a little, Riley? What would happen? Why would Tenet resign because he was getting a lawyer? Exactly.
Well, because Bush now may end up thinking or may be feeling himself or may have been advised by somebody that the buck may stop with him in terms of who actually outed, this CIA person.
With Tenet?
Not with Tenet. Remember, though, that it was Tenet's employee.
Right.
And
I understand.
If it turns out that somebody in the Bush White House did, in fact, tell Robert Novak about this one. Maybe Tenet felt he was in an untenable position.
Right.
As a result of someone coming out.
Oh, so he was just trying to protect himself? But, I mean, obviously he was doing that, but this on top of everything else.
On top of everything else, yeah.
Another thing to erase.
It's a possibility.
Not just
the
WMD information, but now his liability in this case about Wilson's wife. Charlie in Virginia, how are you?
Hey, Mark, how y'all doing?
Pretty good, man.
Just to go back to a comment from the earlier caller about the spirited discussion in the morning as opposed to whining. It's like coffee. I don't drink coffee, but it's nice to have a little jolt of sedition in the morning. But what I called to say about it, just to riff on Tenet, just listening to what he said, what the president said. The president said, I'm sorry he's leaving. But I think actually it's, I'm sorry he's leaving. and when you know, it's like you comedians say, it's a true story.
Yeah.
When Tennant said, no, the only reason for this is my concern for my wonderful family. I wonder if the question that came to him was, you know, you wouldn't want anything to happen for like your wife and your child. You know, it would be good for you to take care of your family at this point.
Yeah, that's what I thought that. Well, yeah, that the threat got to him.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, don't they realize whenever you say, I want to spend more time with my family, it's like Pinocchio's nose starts to grow in front of your eyes.
Yeah, but so no one kills them.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to make sure they were still alive.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Charlie.
Wow.
True story. True story.
Charlie's spoken like a true Brooklynite there.
Yeah, it was great. George in Long Island.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, George.
Good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I wanted to see if you guys watched C-SPAN last night and saw Bill Clinton at the Chicago Book Fair.
I saw about a second of him doing a pretty good joke.
It was terrific. It's going to be on again, I think, on Saturday about 6 p.m. Just to listen to him, it reminded me of when he used to do those town hall meetings.
Yeah.
And that wonderful warm sense he had.
Yeah.
And also his intelligence. He's such a brilliant guy.
He knows everything.
Now we have a president who is not that smart. Okay.
That's an understatement.
I can't wait for Clinton's book to come out because it's not going to be a tell-all book. It's going to be an intelligent book. He talked about it being about the history of politics. It's going to be really good to read right before the election. I think it might do us all some good.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, George. I always
get
like
some
watching
of those independent voters in some of those swing states.
I always like watching Clinton talk, and he's going to be on the show later because I think he might call. He's on the book tour, and, you know, he likes to call in when he's having a good time. 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270, sedition@airamericaradio.com. I don't know. Did we get any Bilderberg emails?
I don't know. Did you?
None of those freaks are.
Didn't you have an email over there?
No, Jim in Manhattan. Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Hey.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I was the New York City director of the American Anti-Slavery Group for 5 years here in New York City. 2 million people have been killed in Sudan. That's more than Bosnia, Kosovo, Rwanda, and East Timor combined.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
Two million.
So I want to let people know they can go in the search engine and look at iabolish.com. That's for the American Anti-Slavery Group. And also Freedom House, which was started by Eleanor Roosevelt, has been very involved in speaking out against this genocide.
Yeah, and we should let our audience know that doesn't know, and I'm glad you called and said this, that one of the big allegations about the government of the Sudan was that they were enslaving their black citizens in fairly substantial numbers. It turned out to be a very controversial issue in the black community here. Louis Farrakhan, the Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, went to the Sudan, said he saw no evidence of slavery. And there's been a lot of back and forth within the black community about whether the slavery allegations are in fact real. From what I've seen from the research I've done, what little I've done, it seems to me no doubt that there is in fact slavery going on.
Well, so go to iabolish.com. Thanks for that call.
Thank you.
Mustafa in New Jersey, how are you?
It's a great show.
Thanks. What's going on?
My comment is that Joseph Ashcroft, I'm sorry, I mean John Goebbels, I'm sorry, John Ashcroft, wants us to believe, I'm sorry, I keep mixing them up.
Yeah, I understand. It's an easy mistake to make.
he wants us to believe that a two-bit thug like Jose Padilla was able to infiltrate Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Yet the CIA, with an annual budget, official budget, I might add, larger than Saudi Arabia's annual budget, was not able to predict September 11th.
Right. Right.
Well, you know, he makes an interesting
thanks for your call, Mustafa.
There's a lot of evidence that says, and many people in the intelligence community have admitted, that they really did not have the intelligence on the ground. They didn't have the clandestine undercover operatives. And people have been saying, wait a minute, you got John Walker Lynn, you've got all these people. Al-Qaeda had been actively recruiting African-American Muslims.
Right.
To their, so if they're so good at it, how come the CIA, with all their money, couldn't get anybody to counter it?
Yeah, well, not just African Americans. I mean, John Walker Lynn was a white guy, and this new guy, the new wanted guy, this Adam, I don't remember his name.
Oh, Perlman.
Adam Perlman is also a white guy. You're right. I mean, they couldn't have figured out somebody to look like a victim enough to do. Anyways, give us a call. No, we're done with calls. We're going to be back with the Recovery Corner. We're going to be back with the drunken official, perhaps, who told Shalabi.
the info here on Air America Radio. Hey, hey, hey. Friday morning, Mark Maron here at Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. If you want some Air America stuff, go to airamericaradio.com and you can get yourself some Air America thong underwear, Air America hat, or a mug.
They got boxers yet?
I don't know.
I don't wear
I think
thongs.
They did have all that stuff. Yeah. I think they do. They have boxers for dogs as well.
Uh-oh.
And thongs for dogs.
I got to be nice. I got to be honest with you. I am Mark, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
In Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. And as always, I offer my counsel to my sponsee, George W. George W., we're still on relapse watch with you, buddy. Your behavior lately, very scary. You are this close to taking a drink, and if you can't see that, it's this close. So George Tenet stepped down yesterday. I guess all problems are over. Is that what you're thinking? I mean, he was the bad guy. He was the Clinton appointee. He's the one to blame. Wrong, buddy. George W., it's all about accepting responsibility, not accepting resignations. Some people will do anything to get out of step four, taking that inventory. You got to take that inventory and share it. That's how we get to recovery. George Tenet's not your problem. It's that other George in the mirror. You should be worried about him, buddy. We've all been down that road before, blaming friends, family members, heads of intelligence agencies. I mean, that road just leads to Drunkyville, Blottoberg, Wasted Corners. Let it begin with you, buddy. Take that other road, the one that leads back to Georgetown. That means back to you, not the section of D.C. Remember, keep the plug in the jug. There's no chemical solution to a spiritual problem. Bend your knee before you bend your elbow. One day at a time. Denial is not a river in Egypt. Sobriety is a journey, not a destination. Nothing is so bad that a drink will make it worse. Think, think, think. It works if you work it. Don't drink, buddy. Get to a meeting. And coincidentally, speaking of drunks, on the phone, the guy, the unnamed official who still refuses to give us their name, who supposedly, allegedly, tip Chalabi, or Chalabi. Chalabi.
If you slur it, it's better.
Chalabi. He told him about the Iranian intelligence, the Iranian code breaking. Was that you, buddy?
No, Mark. Come on. And it's Chalabi. Everybody calls him Chalabi. Chalabi. Chalabi.
What did you tell him, then?
I can't tell you what I told him. I'm not here to tell you, man. Hey. I'm not here to tell you.
So,
okay? I'm already in trouble.
So,
all right?
So
Tenet, not telling you.
So George Tenet resigned.
Oh, yeah.
Do you work for him?
Yeah, no, but he had to go.
Yeah?
He was bad, and he had to go. Yeah, he had to go now. Lua, lua. So, he talked too much.
Yeah?
And a lot of trouble.
Yeah, so.
A lot of trouble.
So what agency do you work for, and what was the information?
Oh, I can't tell you that. I can't tell you my information, but I. No, I can't. You almost got me. You almost got me. Yeah, that's what Chalabi did to me, and I just spilled it.
Yeah.
Whatever,
yeah.
Man.
So
national security.
So you say Chalabi got you drunk?
Oh, well, I mean, he got me drunk. I got him drunk.
Yeah.
What can I tell you?
So,
George Tenet, personal reasons. That's funny. That's why I fall down.
Yeah.
Personal reasons.
Uh-huh. So you're saying the tenant maybe it wasn't for personal reasons?
Oh, or? Come on. He knew all about all that stuff we're going to do in Syria in August.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I did it again, Mark.
All right. Well, maybe you should get to a meeting.
I didn't call you.
You should get to a meeting, man.
I should get to a meeting. I should get to a meeting. All right. I have to go.
All right.
Right. In the next hour of Morning Sedition, we'll check the latest jobs figures with former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, the presidential Palm Pilot, and the countdown to democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Friday. Today, we'll talk to author Ron Suskind about what really goes on when someone leaves the Bush administration. Plus, we're going to wake up Robert Reich because we stole his number from the Franken office. That's not true. We've had his number. We had it before then. We always wake up Robert Reich when the numbers come out. And we'll take a call from William in Chappaqua. It's all coming up. Good morning, Mark Riley. Good morning, Sue Ellicott.
Good morning, Mark.
Again and again and again. Good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Hello.
Bilderberg Group.
Uh-oh.
Meeting in Italy. Same day that the president is in Italy meeting with the Pope. Coincidence? I think not. Who are the Bilderberg Group rumored to have control? They are the ones that, when people say they, those are the they. They're the ones. They run the world. It is a collective that meets every year of bankers, politicians, power brokers of all kinds to decide the agenda for the planet.
Wait a minute. I don't understand. Is it the Bilderbergs or the Carlyle or the Illuminati or the Skull and Bone?
I'll tell you what. Bilderberg is an actual happening, you know, and so are the other ones. The Illuminati is a little vague.
Carlyle is for real.
Carlyle is real. That's a group of private investors, I believe, and consultants and whatnot. But the Bilderberg group are really just, you know, apparently they're very powerful people. I mean, Henry Kissinger is going to be there. Melissa, is that her name? Melinda Gates.
Melinda Gates.
Bill Gates' wife is going to be in attendance because, as we know, Bill Gates owns the world, so he just sent his wife to see what's going to be on the agenda with the people who are running the world.
Surrogate stuff.
And I've actually gotten a copy of some of the discussion points for the Bilderberg Group meeting, the agenda. One of them is discuss upcoming summit with Trilateral Commission, Masons, the Illuminati, and Knights of Templar.
There you go.
Discuss the Walmart application to the European continent. That's not just the Walmart chain, but they're going to enclose the entire continent and make it a mall. France is fighting with Italy over who gets to be the food court. We'll see. keep distracting the masses. American Idol has been an unqualified success. That's another topic. Remember, divide and conquer. Kudos to Comrade Nader. That's another topic. update on construction of futuristic underwater lair. That's been going on for years, apparently, with the Bilderbergers. Progress report on consolidating control of the opiates of the masses, religion, television, opium, of course. keep on developing weird new viruses so we can mass market the antidotes. Of course, always a plan. Remind Mr. George W. Bush that we have a backlog of blackmail material. Topic. Discuss possible defrosting of Hitler, Walt Disney, and Ted Williams to run the world. That's an interesting triumvirate. Is that a triumvirate? This feels like it's going nowhere. Come up with something even better to succeed, crack.
Oh, Lord.
Goal for 2005, a file on everyone. Those are the Bilderberg talking points. Now, let's get to the real issues, Mark Riley. The real issue is Tenet, done with.
Tenet, out. Why is Tenet out? He says personal reasons.
Yeah,
people are speculating, everybody from Colin Powell to Ahmed Shalabi to Dick Cheney to Donald Rumsfeld to George W. Bush himself, who consulted a lawyer yesterday on the day Tenet resigned. So who knows what the real reason is?
As Gore said,
Donald Rumsfeld ought to resign.
Indeed.
And
George Tenet
ought to resign.
Nobody is saying he shouldn't have resigned. It doesn't matter which paper you pick up, whether it's the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, you know, left, right, or anybody. No one is saying that this was inappropriate.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and it's sad in the way Tenet has served the second longest tenure as CIA boss, second only to Alan Dulles, who was around during the Eisenhower years. Let's go back, if we might, to 1997.
Do we need music?
Before the bloom was off the rose, when George Tenet was just named CIA director, and he had high hopes for the future of his agency.
Our goal for the next 50 years is no less than to provide you, Mr. President, with the most complete, timely, and accurate information ever made available to any leader in history.
Or the information that you need to make whatever case you need to make.
Now, that was to Bill Clinton, by the way. That was in 97. That goes back a ways. But it sounded like Reuters or something.
If I cut Sue off, what were you going to say?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know now.
Well, you heard Tenet say that he had some really hard and fast goals for the CIA. Well, just 5 years after Tenet made that statement, and after the September 11, 2001 terror attacks, Republican Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama had a scathing assessment of Tenet's leadership.
There have been more massive failures of intelligence
on his watch as director of CIA than any director in the history of the agency.
Wow. So you see that there's kind of a divergence of opinion there, and there's a lot of stuff that and you know, Jack Rice, interestingly enough, mentioned the same thing that we did, the whole targeting of the Chinese embassy
by 1999.
The whole idea that the Indians detonated a series of nuclear warheads the year before that in 98, that the CIA got caught absolutely flat-footed about. That was something that really concerned a lot of folks.
Yeah, and then, of course, there was the 2001 problem on September 11th.
On September 11th.
And then, of course, the July, the Joseph Wilson issue with his wife.
Or, the now, one that caused that was the uranium to consult
thing.
A lawyer.
That was the uranium in Africa.
Africa, the yellow issue. Cake yes, fiasco.
The non-existent yellow cake fiasco.
And, again, you know, this is stuff. Remember that when Colin Powell went before the United Nations in the run-up to the war, he came with charts and graphs and videos and dogs and ponies and bells and
music.
He had everything.
And now Brazil
gets
the case for war.
And, I mean, this wasn't a five-minute speech, and he was depending at the time on intelligence from, among others, the CIA and George Tenet.
And didn't Woodward say in his book that, you know, what was going on was that, you know, they wanted specific intelligence. And even if Tenet said, you know, we don't have, you know, any sort of intelligence that we can really guarantee is good, Bush said, I don't care.
Go back and do it again until you get it right.
And it almost felt like, certainly with the weapons of mass destruction, that Tenet sort of buckled and gave them what they wanted ultimately. You know, and a lot of the intelligence was based on Chalabi, on the weapons of mass, and his relatives who were giving information, and the neocons had chosen these guys. It just seems that with getting rid of Chalabi and with getting rid of Tenet, they're trying to erase the idea that we went to war over false premises.
Right. I mean, he was definitely in a hard position, but at a point at which he could have had some integrity and stood up to the president and said, you know what, I've given you what I've got, and I can't trump it up anymore, he failed on. I think it was in the Bob Woodward book that he was quoted as telling George Bush that there was a slam dunk. Wasn't that the quote? Slam dunk, that there were weapons of mass destruction?
Right.
And, you know, that was one of the main reasons that the Bush administration gave, the international coalition of the so-called willing gave, to go to war against Iraq. And that they've been incredibly discredited. I think the overall perception is that he's a fall guy who deserve to fall. And the question now is, will it deflect attention away from other people in the Bush administration who are as guilty, if not more so, of misleading the public?
You mean like Bush?
Among others.
He'd be number one, as a matter of fact.
And Dick Cheney, as you speculated
Dick
earlier.
Dick Cheney, who was running
being awfully quiet.
Yeah, he's been awfully quiet. A three-sentence statement on Tenet's resignation. And remember that this is the same guy who was running out to Langley on a regular basis in the run-up to the war, and it was Cheney who said, hey, this is not what we're looking for.
Did you get what we need yet?
Yeah.
Rephrase this so we can go to war on it.
Yep.
It is amazing, though, isn't it, how unpublic Cheney is. I mean, how quiet, how sort of surreptitious his efficiency is all about, kind of not being visible.
They call that stealth in the business.
That's right, stealth. And you know who else has been kind of quiet about all this? Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice is the national security advisor. She, too, was supposed to coordinate intelligence information for the benefit of the country.
She probably
heard much out of her lately?
She probably hasn't been told about Tenet's resignation yet, so...
Well, she was part of the group that was in the Rose Garden yesterday but she found out when Bush pulled them all off to the side and said, hey, guess what? Tenet quit.
She was probably pretty instrumental in this, too, I think. She's been off to the side. She was off to the side on those speeches when he was at the U.S. Army. Was it the War College? U.S.
Army
War
College. Yeah.
She was up with Karl Rove off to the side. She's been, since all those TV appearances, she's not been all that prominent.
Can it be considered them not knowing the Tenet was going to resign? Is that also an intelligence failure? I mean,
it's a failure of intelligence.
Yeah, on the part of the president who did know.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know,
who encouraged it?
Wouldn't be the first time he failed in intelligence, that's for sure.
An absence of intelligence.
Yeah.
Still ahead, the president's Palm Pilot, and when we come back, we'll talk with author Ron Suskind about the exit door at the Bush White House, right here on Air America Radio. Wow, now I'm in college. The English piece.
I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. I'm here with Mark Riley and Stu Ellicott on Air America Radio. It is now time to revisit the presidential Palm Pilot that my friend in the Oval Office downloaded from Bush's Palm Pilot when he was praying. Here's the schedule for today. 8 a.m. wake up, stay on message. Everything that goes wrong from now on, blame George Tenet. 8:30 a.m. check out Rome. Remember, when in Rome, I don't know the end of that one. Oh, well, I'll just be me. 10:30 a.m. go to St. Peter's in the Vatican. Make note of floor plans for possible bathroom renovation in Crawford. Noon, meet with Pope. Notes, do not make fun of his outfit. Do not point out if he drools. No nicknames, not even Popester. Ask if he can excommunicate John Kerry, preferably in October. 1:55 p.m. visit memorial to Italian civilians slaughtered by the Nazis. Remain somber. Think about latest poll numbers. Don't thumbs up anyone. 4 o'clock p.m. visit Roman Forum. Suggest they get rid of all those broken columns and generally fix the place up a little bit. 8 o'clock p.m. dinner with Italian Prime Minister. Remember to compliment Chef Boyardee. 10 o'clock p.m. go to bed. Think about upcoming D-Day ceremony. Find out what D stands for.
Did we?
No, I got to admit, I don't know what D stands for.
I have no idea. Normandy? I don't know.
Maybe Ron will know. Joining us now by phone from Washington, D.C. to discuss CIA Director George Tenet's resignation is Ron Suskind. He is the best-selling author of The Price of Loyalty, George W. Bush, The White House, and The Education of Paul O'Neill. Good morning, Ron.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So what do you make of this Tenet resignation?
Well, it's an inconvenient time to be losing your CIA director. There's no doubt about that. And it's going to be a very interesting, I think, couple of months. George Tenet is it can go one way or the other. He's a lightning rod because he knows so very much.
But
and some of that could be damaging to the president and to the campaign that is unfolding.
You say it's inconvenient, you think it surprised George Bush? You don't think that he was, muscled a little bit?
Oh, no. My sense is that, George Tenet was exhausted. He didn't need much to decide that it's time to be with his family. But by the same token, I don't think any of these things ever happen without a preliminary discussion as to choices and consequences. So I'm sure there were discussions in and around George leaving.
How does that usually unfold in this administration? From talking to Paul O'Neill and James DiIulio, what is the process?
Well, usually there is. That's a good question. Usually there are little wisps of smoke as to problems. And usually a senior official, cabinet member, or whatnot, has folks check whether the president is pleased or displeased. And at some point, they get a signal back. And at that point, in this sort of, shadow dance, they know what they're supposed to do. It's not, in most cases, a kind of, angry phone call or storming in and out of an office. But the fact is that the signaling that goes on is usually pretty darn clear, and everybody understands what they're supposed to do.
Is that so blame can be displaced and that nobody has to take responsibility for actually firing anybody?
Well, there's some of that. People leave because, it's time for them to go. People do not leave senior positions in administrations unless it's clear that they're supposed to walk out the door. And what's interesting here about George Tenet is that, George Tenet could provide political assets to this White House if he becomes a magnet for blame. Now, in some ways, George Tenet has already been a magnet for blame. We've gone through a bunch of ins and outs with George. Early on, a couple months ago, George was essentially taking the fall for bad intelligence on WMDs and weapons of mass destruction. That kind of didn't work. The thing that's interesting about Tenet is he sits on top of a big giant mountain, and it's a mountain built on intelligence, for better or for worse. So that when
George Tenet was being kind of singled out a couple months ago, you know, it's George's fault. Right. Thank goodness we have someone to blame. You just saw week after week coming out of the Big Mountain because there are lots and lots of people at CIA and everybody has a telephone. So that didn't work. And essentially what happened after that first go-round is that everyone backed off. Who's at fault? Is it George? Is it Condi?
Mm-hmm.
The upshot is that now that George is out the door, it's, let's just say, a little bit easier for him to be a magnet for fault. You know, someone's got to be at fault here, Mark.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, the fact is that weapons of mass destruction were at the very center of the justification for war. There is no more serious issue in terms of informed consent with the American public than the notion of going to war. The weapons were at the center of it. The White House and everybody else in the free world and on the planet says, my goodness, there are no weapons. Who's at fault for that? Is it a question of a broken process? Meaning, you know, inside of CIA there are problems, and by virtue of that faulty, you know, infected intelligence rose up to the Oval Office, or is it a question of mistakes made above George Level's pay grade? That's the big question. Mm-hmm. Was it a mishap, or was it willful deception? And that's a question that essentially George Tenet knows the best answer to. The question is, would George Tenet ever talk about that? Would people around George Tenet want to talk about that? We know where the White House stands. You know, George Tenet gives him a chance to say there are problems and we are making corrections. Even if they don't say that publicly, even if they sort of say George Tenet is a terrific guy and thank God he served us, secretly and quietly, I think we'll be hearing the other.
Ron Susskind, as the author of The Price of Loyalty, a book about George Bush and the White House, give us, please, if you can, your kind of insider view on what this means for other people in the administration who have been criticized for such things as knowing about the abuses that the U.S. Army committed in military prisons in Iraq, and whether other people are likely to come under fire, or the Tenet kind of clears the way for them to stay in their jobs now.
Well, you know, I think that's a good question, too. I think the question is how hot it's going to get. You know, this White House has been very clear that that it feels from the inside that getting rid of someone is more problematic than keeping them. If you keep them, you preserve a kind of plausible deniability where, you know, it seems like the team's intact and we're all still fine with each other. What's your problem out there, American public? But the fact is that as the heat rises, president, essentially, because it's all about the president, protecting the president, defending him, you know, lifting his status as best the White House can, it's about what is best for the president. If the heat gets too hot, he's got to throw bodies out the door. It's that simple. You know, if the lightning strikes are getting too close to the White House from these collecting clouds, then he's got to essentially say it's Richard Sanchez or it's George Tenet or it's somebody else who now is not in the building. So you can't be blaming me, at least at this moment, for errors. And I get to say I'm making changes. At the same time, people say, well, you got rid of that guy. Clearly you did that because you made a big mistake.
Thank you, Ron Susskind, for joining us. Always a pleasure.
Take care, guys.
You take care, too. That was Ron Susskind, the author of The Price of Loyalty, George W. Bush, the White House, and the Education of Paul O'Neill, who in the book, Paul O'Neill was asked to make it look like he was leaving for personal reasons. We didn't get to go into that with
Well, you know, there's another question here. The Senate Intelligence Committee has issued this report. It's 400 pages long. The CIA has had the report for a month. Now, with Tenet gone, is it going to be up to John McLaughlin to respond to this report, which everyone says is extremely critical of his agency?
Huh. Right.
I have an answer to your question, you guys, before Ron Susskind came on, and that was, what does the D in D-Day stand for? It's Disembarkation Day. It's when all the Allies disembarked on the coast of northern France.
Okay. Huh. Well, I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Just so I thought.
This is not French Coastal Day, right?
Yeah.
Up next, we talk to Robert Reich on the new jobs numbers and George Tenet, plus the liberal agenda. This is Air America Radio.
Good morning. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott, who are doing musical accompaniment.
Oh, banjos. This drives us all crazy.
That's Sue on the whistle.
That's because I'm just embarrassed that I have to apologize that D-Day does not stand for Disembarkation Day. Apparently it just stands for D-Day.
For
Day-Day. Day-Day, because when in military parlance, when you're going to go and have an operation, if it's...
Countdown.
Yeah, if it's 10 days before, it's called Day 10, Day 9, Day 8, and you go on the day. And then the day where you actually launch your operation is Day-Day. Sure. And this is the one that's it's a general phrase, but it's stuck because this particular attack with the Allies when they invaded into Normandy, turned the whole course of the Second World War. So it just became known as D-Day.
Y'all got upset.
So, hey.
I'm upset.
Why are you upset?
Because I lost a bet to Dan Pashman, our producer.
Oh, yeah. Where are those?
How big was that bet? A latte?
Well, no. Nah, yeah. The next latte. No, because I really thought there'd be more than 344,000 new jobs created, and it's not that high.
I know. I'm waiting for the numbers. How do you know what they are?
It's just under a quarter of a million.
All right, so it's like just under 250,000.
And Pashman said 266,919, so he's much closer than I was.
Well, Bush might be glad he's out of the country when they're announcing those then.
Yeah.
So, he's falling behind on delivering his 2.5 million.
And you were off by 100,000.
I was off by 100,000. I was being cockeyed optimist.
So let's see what Robert Reich has to say, Clinton's labor secretary. Robert Reich, how are you? Good morning. Sorry to wake you up.
I'm right on the dot. I said 250,000, and it turns out to be just a little bit under 250,000.
Good for you.
Well, that's why you're a labor secretary, well, and I'm sitting here with these people.
Well, that's right. That's exactly. But, you know,
what does it mean?
It means that we are sort of on track for where we anticipated to be, but we're still, you know, almost 2 million jobs below where we were at the start of the Bush administration. So we're still digging our way out of a hole. 250,000 is not bad. It's not good. It's what the market expected. It's what I expected. It does mean that the Federal Reserve Board is probably going to raise interest rates this month because the Fed is a little bit worried about inflation. And, of course, we have also oil prices to worry about.
Robert Reich, how is it that Republicans, and I've seen Republican spokespeople talking about jobs creation, they say that there have been 1 million new jobs created during the Bush administration?
Well, there may be 1 million new jobs created, but if you look at the total number of jobs we had at the start versus where we are now, we are still down 2 million. In other words, you could create jobs, but if you're losing more jobs than you're creating, you're actually digging a deeper and deeper hole. So then they're playing games with the numbers. What's actually happening now is we are digging our way slowly out of the hole that that the Bush administration presided over between the year 2000, 2001. 2002, started to pick up a little bit in 2004, but remember we were down 3 million jobs not too long ago. So the population, meanwhile, and that we haven't even got into this, the population is growing by about 150,000 a month. New people, young people coming into the job market, immigrants. So you have to have at least 150,000 new jobs per month just to stay even.
The population is growing 150,000 people per month?
The working population, 150,000 a month.
Wow.
So now, this means that is the economy really getting better?
The economy, in terms of job numbers, is slowly getting a little bit better. But here is the big, big question mark. Number one, long-term unemployed. If you've been unemployed, and if you're likely to be unemployed for a long time, we have a record number of people who have been unemployed for more than 16 weeks. Number two, the quality of the jobs coming back is actually very poor. Most of them are retail, restaurant, hotel, hospital workers. They get paid under $30,000. A year. These are not, you know, they're not terrible jobs, but they're not really very good jobs. They're jobs that don't provide enough money for a lot of people to live on well, particularly in New York or Massachusetts or on the West Coast. Number three, health care costs keep on going up, so a bigger chunk of everybody's paycheck is going to health care.
And how do the oil prices pay into the economic world here?
Well, everybody's very jittery. I mean, oil prices are now over $40 a barrel, which means that the gas pump, it's way over $2, and OPEC yesterday, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, decided that they would expand production, but the problem is that they're already just about at capacity. And given the attacks on Saudi Arabia, just recently and then over the last month, people are very, very nervous about the security of those pipelines and all of that oil infrastructure. If there is another attack, if there is kind of more worry about the security of those oil supplies, there's going to be a higher spike in oil prices. Now, remember, and this is very important, high oil prices have been coming just before or during 9 of the last 10 recessions. High oil prices came just before or during 9 of the last 10 recessions since World War II, so it's a bad sign. I mean, the oil prices are not out of control yet by any means, but it's not a good sign in terms of keeping this very anemic recovery going.
Secretary Raj, let's move a minute to the resignation yesterday by CIA Director George Tenet. You gave up your position as Secretary of Labor for personal reasons. He gave the same reasons. What do you think of his?
Well, the odd thing here is it's 5 weeks before, or 5 months rather, before an election, a very critical election. You know, if it's family reasons, what you do, like I did, you wait until after the president's reelected, or you wait until after the election. Bush will not be reelected, but you wait until after the election. George Tenet waits for 5 months before the election, a critical election and a critical position, to announce his resignation. It smells fishy. I mean, I think basically he knew that there was going to be a very negative report coming out on intelligence, on failures of intelligence, weapons of mass destruction that were not there, not responding to clues about 9/11, and then combine that with the scandal over Ahmed Shalabi and Abu Ghraib, the prison, and the leak from the White House on the identity of the CIA operative, you know, after Ambassador Joe Wilson's wife.
All that.
All of that. You know, just the White House wants a scapegoat. It's very clear.
Yeah, but Rumsfeld's already dumping on him. Rumsfeld said, you
know, 5 months before an election, the Bush administration, the White House, wants somebody to blame, and then they can say, well, he's gone now, so we have a clean slate, reelect me, the president, and I will now clean house.
Rumsfeld said that September 11th attacks could have been stopped if terror cells had been penetrated. They're already, like, this is the guy's not even, he hasn't even cleaned his desk out, and they're taking shots at him.
Well, the Rumsfeld and Tenet were at loggerheads. I mean, there's a big fight going on between the Pentagon and the CIA, and it came to a head over Chalabi. I mean, that's Ahmed Chalabi, who evidently leaked secrets to the Iranians, telling them that we had broken their code. He got somebody in the Pentagon to tell him. He was a favorite of Wolfowitz and all of the neocons, but the CIA and the State Department were very suspicious about Chalabi all along. They blew the whistle on Chalabi. They launched the investigation of Chalabi. They are now using lie detector tests in the Pentagon trying to find out who told Shalabi about breaking the Iranian code. So you can imagine all of the internecine warfare going on between the CIA and the Pentagon.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Robert, can we hang out with us and we'll take some calls for you?
Sure.
We'll be back with Robert Reich and your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We also have the liberal agenda. So give us a call and come back. Yeah, well, we're taking your calls for Robert Reich at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. That's Robert Reich, the Clinton Labor Secretary and author of Reason, Why Liberals Will Win the Battle for America. So call us, 866-303-AAR0. Right now it's time for our new piece, Countdown to Democracy. As the deadline for handover of power to the Iraqis approaches, we'd like to explore various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. Today's issue is maintaining order. Leaders of Iraq, now that you've got a new government, you're going to need to maintain order because, look around, you don't have it. Car bombings, mortar fire, that's not order. The new government needs something to keep the people in line. Without alcohol, pornography, refined sugar, or cable television, that's a tall order. Frequently, we found that religion does a nice job of quieting people down, but evidently not for you guys. So what to do? You need to pass something like our Patriot Act. From the name on down, it's a work of pure genius. It not only makes people docile, but over here it offers the illusion that the government is protecting them, primarily from people who look like you. And say what you will about Saddam, things were orderly. He knew how to play the fear card. Now it's your turn, my friends. Good luck and God bless. This is day 25 in our countdown to democracy. Live free or die. Taking your calls for Robert Reich, 866-303-2270. Seth in New Jersey, que pasa?
Good morning, Secretary Good morning. Reich.
Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I just want to say that I'm one of the millions of people that have been out of work for quite some time, and my Republican friends keep telling me that the economy is strong and that Bush is creating jobs hand over fist, and I was wondering, do you have any debating suggestions for them?
Well, number one, you could say that the rate and the number of people who are long-term unemployed is at a record high, including you, Seth, unfortunately. Number two, you could tell them that the jobs that are being created are mostly lousy jobs. They're low paid and they don't have health insurance. Number three, you can tell them that we still have lost net over 2 million jobs, so we're still digging our way out of a hole. So anybody that thinks this is a great economy for working people has not been looking closely or is not a working person.
Thank you for your call, Seth. Carrie in Ohio. Carrie?
Hello.
Hi. You have a question for Mr. Reich?
Hi, Carrie. Yes, I do. Good morning. I was wondering if there were any statistics kept on how many of these 250,000 jobs that have been created are temporary jobs, part-time jobs, or even in this country?
Good question.
Carrie, they're in this country, but we don't know how many of them are part-time jobs, how many of them are jobs that are paying way, way below what the person had earned before. We don't know very much about the quality of the jobs yet. Now, we do know, because the Labor Department and other departments in government do collect data going back, you know, let's say up to about February or March, and on the basis of those data, we do know that most of the new jobs being created are not very good jobs, unfortunately. I mean, these are jobs that don't pay much, as I told Seth just now, and they don't have health care attached to them.
Thanks for your call. Jerry, you have a call for Secretary Reich?
Yes, I do. Yeah, thank you very much.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, my pleasure to be speaking to all of you, especially you, Mr. Reich. Yeah, on the issue of job creation, since the unemployment rate over the past few months has remained about the same or gone up slightly, and also since Bush's chief economic advisor, Gregory Mankiw, once seriously proposed reclassifying even old burger flipping fast food jobs
as manufacturing jobs. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, right. Well, in light of all that, how do we know we can really trust these constantly deceptive and misleading Bush administration with respect to their new rosy job creation estimates?
Well, don't trust the Bush administration on anything except these numbers come from a place called the Bureau of Labor Statistics that is very insulated from politics, and I know that because I worked with these people. They're very good people, very reliable people. These numbers are based on surveys very carefully done. They're not perfect. You know, they revise them from month to month when they get better information, but this is not political spin. Now, 250,000 new jobs is not, is not something to break out the champagne about, particularly given how many job losses there have been over the last few years, but it does indicate that, in general, the economy is not terrible. The Federal Reserve Board is probably going to raise interest rates this month. The economy is it's a lackluster, anemic jobs recovery. It's not a big blowout jobs recovery. It's just sort of a middling jobs recovery with not very good jobs.
Mm. Howie, quickly for Professor Reich.
Hello.
Howie, go ahead.
Hello,
Howie.
Yeah, I wanted to know if you would really think that this government has a plot to turn it back into like an aristocracy. You know, similar to like a monarchy, and everybody's going to be serfs, and the only people who are going to be elected are going to come from aristocracy. And
okay, Thanks, Howie.
The fact of the matter is that the Bush tax cuts, and that Bush wants to extend these tax cuts, about 50% of them went to people whose incomes are over $300,000 a year. Now, the gap between people whose incomes are over $300,000 a year and everybody else is wider than it's been since statistics have been kept about this, over 100 years. I mean, we have not seen this kind of a wage and income and wealth gap in this country since the 1890s. And this is a huge problem. I mean, I think you're being a little bit facetious about an aristocracy, but in fact, that's what we're getting.
It is that.
Yeah. We have a Bush aristocracy, and yeah. It's a government that is owned by big corporations, and who's donating to the Bush campaign?
Right.
Well, you got a lot of CEOs and big companies and very, very wealthy individuals because they want to keep their tax breaks and they want to keep all their corporate welfare
yep.
and they want to keep everything else they've gotten from the Bush administration.
Well, thank you so much, Secretary Rice, for joining us as always.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take
yeah,
care.
The book
thank
is you. Reason Why Liberals Will Win the Battle for America, and that's available now, I believe. And right now... Well, actually, after the break, I think we got William from Chappaqua.
Another author.
Yeah. So come back on Air America Radio. Is that the Spinners? It's the Spinners,
this
right?
This is the Spinners.
Yeah.
The late Felipe Wynn.
We're coming
stop
in.
Stop talking and start dancing.
Coming in for landing here on Morning Sedition. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott. We got William from Chappaqua on the phone. How are you, President? Saw you on C-SPAN. How's the book tour going?
Good morning. It's going all right. It's hard work. My hand's so tired from being up all night.
What do you mean?
You know, signing all those books.
Oh, womp womp. You keeping it under control? Is Bill bothering? Oh, there he is, Bill. What's going on, Bill?
Hey, buddy. How's it going? It's book tour, Bill. We're out on the road, party.
Is your hand tired as well?
Oh, my hand's not tired. My hand's got other things to do, my friend.
What are you doing next? Where are you going? Are you on a tour bus or?
We're in Chicago right now.
Oh, yeah?
We're in Chicago. We're going to hit the south.
You're
we're
going to
hit
up?
The north. Oh, we're going to hit it, I tell you.
Are you just waking up or?
No. Well, I've been out. You know, things happen. The man has needs.
Now, you're reading from the book or what's the plan?
Well, you know, they say a lot of presidential memoirs are dull and self-serving. Yeah. I'm hoping mine will be interesting.
Yeah.
And self-serving. Oh, you got there's so much to talk about, but I'm not going to be out there screaming like Al Gore did last week. The man sounded backed up. Very dangerous. Very dangerous, Al. Yeah. Got to let it go, my friend.
Why don't you take him on the road with you?
Oh, come on, would you take Al Gore on the road? It was bad enough. It was hard enough getting Hillary to stay home.
Is Al Gore a buzzkill? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, is he ever? Come on, look at it. Look at Dipper. You do the math.
Hey, we gotta go. We're expecting a fax from Barbara Streisand any second here. And I,
yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Mark. Hey, Barb, play. Oh, it's fun.
All right, well, there it is. Oh, my God, I guess he wasn't lying. Well, take it. Take care, President. We got the liberal agenda coming in right now. Here's the fact from the Streisand compound, where I guess we know what's going on there. Get your notebooks and your pens. Here's the first one. Suggest new federal bureau establishing a nationwide system of chill-out rooms. 2, propose transgender conflict resolution expert to be new head of the CIA. 3, organize National Day of Healing since the breakup of the band Phish. 4, insist that Iraqi prisoners be given access to aromatherapy. And 5, go to nearest commencement, stand and shout, "It doesn't matter, Bush is going to kill us all anyway." That's our show. Thank you for being here. I had a wonderful morning.
Have a great weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, have fun this weekend, huh? You know, we're not supposed to do that, though. We're not supposed to talk about the weekend because everybody else has still got 8 hours to do before their weekends.
All right, have a good day.
Thinking about the weekend, too.
Good day, and then have a good weekend.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
8 hours from now, have a great week.
Yeah.
Coming up on Monday's Morning Sedition, we'll have the latest fallout from George Tenet's departure, plus comedian Sherrod Small from VH1's Best Week Ever. That's Monday's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. See you.